Hey everybody, this is John Fusco, and you're listening to the No Film School podcast. Adam Leon made only one short before breaking onto the indie film scene with his South by Southwest winning debut feature, Gimme the Loot. With a budget around $60,000, the writer-director won the Someone to Watch Award at the Film Independent Spirits and was able to get his film into almost every notable film festival on the market, including a run in the Uncertain Regard competition at Cannes. How did he pull it off? Hard work and humble beginnings. Leon's work ethic was noticed on set as a PA, and as a result of his efforts, he found collaborators and producers that were eager to invest in his future. His latest film, Tramps, debuted at the Toronto International Film Festival last summer and was quickly scooped up by Netflix. It follows a young man and woman as they are unwittingly thrown into the middle of a money drop-off gone awry. But for Leon, the real challenge came in crafting a genuine romance without leaning on cliché. To achieve this goal, he turned to his writing partner and producer, Jamond Washington, early on in the development process. Leon and Washington join us on this week's episode of the No Film School podcast to talk filmmaking as a collaborative art form, the right way to take notes on your screenplay, and finding partners that won't compromise your vision, but help to build upon it. So I'll just ask you guys to introduce yourselves and so our listeners can familiarize themselves with your voices. Starting with you, Adam.
I'm Adam Leon. I am the writer-director of Tramps.
And I'm Jamond Washington. I'm producer of Tramps.
Nice. So did you have any part in writing the movie as well? Or is this kind of, how does your process work collaboratively? Because I know you two have worked on a script before together for Gimme the Loot.
Yeah. We developed Tramps together. Mm-hmm. As far as the process, let's see.
I went to Jamond very, very, very early on with you. And, I'm curious what you think if this is the right telling of it, right? Everybody has a different telling of a story. I went to Jamond really super early in the idea phase of Tramps. I had actually been writing some pages, and I was looking for someone to collaborate with more intensely early on. I developed a project for TV, and I really liked how that process went, that you were dealing with collaborators and dealing with notes super early. And so we sat down for a dinner. I told you about it before, and then we sat down at a dinner, and I basically was like, Do you want to do this? You want to go on this journey? And this is sort of what I want to do. We sort of at the dinner talked about telling a romance, a romantic adventure, and telling it in a way that felt very genuine and a different take on it, and a sort of an honest take on both the romantic elements of it, the New York elements, the character elements, and the crime elements of it. And what I had been working on was a little bit zanier, I would say, and Jamond, I think, for the better, focused us in a little. And then what we did is I would write pages, and then on Thursday night I would deliver the pages, and Friday we would either meet or have a really long Skype, and with a lot of notes and just a lot of talking it through, and then we just repeat that every week.
Are you guys both based in New York, or where? Yeah.
Yeah, we're both in New York.
Cool. So, what would some of those, I guess, meetings turn out? You said he was focusing you more. He was like grounding you more. Is there any sort of like example specifically of how he did that? If not.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, but I think that there was a little bit of this, some of the pages I had sent him, which were super rough, and we'd worked together before, so I could trust him to see stuff that was super rough, and he could see.
I think that's important to talk about, because I think the one thing about our relationship is I think we genuinely like each other, mm-hmm. and genuinely trust each other, and it's really a safe space. Like we're not afraid to have bad ideas with each other.
Right.
So we toss stuff around like very easily, and like I think it's a really good way to do that. And we've got a shorthand, I think, because of that. And
one of the key things we were stuck on was this idea of how to handle the mother character and not make her a stock character.
Right.
I just remember thinking about this last night, how you were like, this is probably the worst idea ever. And you said the idea, and I was like, that's it. That's the idea. And so you need to be able to do that because of that. But yeah. I think that, or basically looking at the pages, you, one of the things that you said early on was like, this movie, this screenplay has this scene in it and it has that scene in it. And I don't think this scene and that scene are in the same movie. And what is this movie? That's, it's something that Jamin talks a lot, really well about, like coming up with a great idea, but saying that's not Give Me the Loot or that's not Tramps. And those are two different answers, you know, something that could work in Give Me the Loot, which is a little bit more comic, or there's a lot of different things, just sort of finding the heart and tone and world of what the project is, and then being able to say, being in this sort of trusted space and being able to say, no, that's a great idea, that's a great scene, but that's not this movie. That's a sentence you use a lot.
Yeah, and I think we knew where we wanted to go. Like, we knew where we wanted this thing to end. I think, and that we sort of backed into what the film was.
The last scene. Yeah. We had the last scene. We knew what it was. We wanted the last, like, 5 minutes of the movie. We knew what our goal was. And the goal was to not make an anti-romance. The goal was to make a romance and deliver on that. And deliver on on two people who are stuck in their lives, who decide after meeting each other 48 hours later to change their lives, which is a filmmaking cliche. It's a story cliche. But when that can work, it can be amazing if you can really buy into it. And how do you buy into that now when those tropes feel particularly tired, when I think most romances are very much either going through the motions or are anti-romances, which I think is the easiest thing to do, to press that button, to just press the button of like, they don't end up together. You know, and I don't know why I said it that way, but they don't end up together. Or love is death, you know, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, love is love. And how can we do that and tell this sort of story that is emotional in that way and embrace that, but do it in a way that is with our style and do it in a way that was fresh. So that was exciting to us. So we knew we needed to get there, and we needed it to be genuine and have the audience want these people to change their lives.
Yeah. And I remember when you first talked, because you talked to me about it before you sent me the pages you had. And I think when you find people that you're good at collaborating with, you sort of understand no matter what, you're going to work on the project with them. It's like, if they have a project, you're going to figure out how to work on it together. But I really fell in love with the way you were talking about the project. And then the pages that you had at that point were around the heist a little more. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really fit in with the way you were talking about the project just yet. But I fell in love with the idea of the project that you had. And I think the idea was, how do we get this idea that you had into the pages that existed at that point. And I think we did it. That was a lot of it. Was like,
how do we get to that? How do we make an audience feel this way? How do we deliver that feeling in a way that feels completely genuine and natural and honest? And that became just sort of having that as a goal was really helpful. And then we also had the thing where I was like, they have to go to the suburbs for the middle of the movie. And even at certain points, we were like, what if they didn't? And we were always immediately like, no. That's a rule that we've put in. That's part. The heart of this movie is they move from the city to the suburbs on this adventure and they come back. And like, so that was something that helped us structurally, even if at times it became frustrating. We just were like, and I like doing that, is setting a few things where you're like, this movie has to do this thing, you know? And it was sort of like, it's going to end in this way, and this is going to be something is going to happen in the middle, and it's going to happen in this setting, and they're going to come back a little different. And what that thing is the thing actually we probably ended up working on the most in the script.
And I think it's good because anytime you come up with those things, I feel like I always push back a little bit, and what it ends up doing is making you defend and understand why you want to do those things
better. Yeah, absolutely.
That's why I love bringing on a collaborator early, and that's why I actually love notes. And I find it very odd when people – there's this sort of – I think I'm going to say bullshit, if that's all right. I think there's this sort of bullshit like, I don't take notes. I don't know why I'm doing all this voice work today. But I don't take notes. Notes, I'm uncompromised in my thing. And it's like, be uncompromised if you want to, although I don't know what that means and how that actually would work in making a film. But don't compromise your vision, you know, without a doubt. You have to have this vision and you have to execute. communicate that vision and execute that vision. That's the job. So when someone gives you a note, that should be a that should be telling you whether or not you're communicating or executing your vision. We always talk about that there's these different kinds of notes. There's notes that you get from someone where you're like, oh, that's not what this movie is. You want this movie to be something else. Mm-hmm. You can disregard that note and you can easily defend that. This movie is supposed to feel like this. It's not supposed to feel like that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Then there are notes that you know when you hear them that they are right. Mm-hmm. And you could wish that they weren't right because it means you have to do more work.
Right.
But you know that they're right. And then there's what I think are probably most notes, which are the note is wrong. And therefore, it's very easy to dismiss. But it's getting at something that isn't working. It may not even be the scene itself that's not working. It might be something that's setting up the scene 30 pages later. But and that's another thing I think you know. You just know that somewhere.
And you've got to those are the notes you have to translate and figure out how to make them helpful. And they usually are, there's something about them that can absolutely be helpful, but you got to figure
it
out.
The easiest note is the one where you're like, ah, that's a good idea. Yeah. those middle notes are like 90% of notes.
It's like, what's actually causing this thing that they're saying?
Why,
what is it actually coming from? Yeah.
And if you know what your project is supposed to be, and that's what the first couple months while we were writing, but a lot of it was like, what is this, you know, we know where we want to end up. We know certain things about it. We know who the characters are, but, you know, while you're finding that. But once you really, really know that inside and out, you can defend it against any note. And if you can't, you're not there yet. You don't have your vision ready. So take the note. The note might be garbage, but you should, so what? You should be able, you should be skilled enough to say, like, no, here's why. And do that in an articulate and passionate way that someone in the room will be able to go like, oh, he or she, that you know what you're doing, right. You know.
So then, and the great thing about, I think
we're not going to let you ask any questions.
This is fantastic.
You're not asking any questions.
All I want. That's how we do it.
The great thing about having a producer as part of the development process is once you get to the point where you can defend everything, if the producer was part of that process, then you now have a producer going out into the world defending everything.
An ally.
Yeah.
Totally. Very smart. That was good. That's like ninja stuff. I never thought about that.
So then I guess what I would ask is, as a director and a screenwriter, where is the more valuable place to sort of find those strategies or those discoveries? Is it before you actually start shooting or is it while you're shooting?
Oh, I think you want to know. I think, I guess maybe I won't articulate this perfectly, but I think you want to walk into on set on the first day feeling 100% that if you shot and made the movie 100% the way that it is in the script, that it will be a masterpiece and know that that is wrong. Like, I think that is also, you want to know that the movie's going to tell you what it is and it's going to change and be completely open to those changes. But I mean, there's this Mike Nichols line that I was talking about with some people last night, and it's you beat the script and 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 you just keep working on that script, and then you show up on set and the movie tells you what it is. But you need to, for me, I think you cannot show up on set and be like, we're going to discover what the middle of this movie is going to feel like, or we're going to find even like this scene, what's the story of this scene? Like, we'll figure that out. No, you have it figured out, and then you can realize you're wrong. But once you have the whole thing figured out, in your heart, you know what feels like the movie. So you can say, this is wrong because we thought this was going to be right, but this is wrong because of this. What do we do? And you can rewrite that scene on set. But that happens all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we're always rewriting a scene on set, or we're going back and shooting it later in the production. But
not because we're not prepared. It's a completely different thing. And I'll answer that question from a producer perspective.
Absolutely.
It takes a lot more resources to plan to find that on set.
Mm.
A lot more. And so if you, especially if you're working with limited resources, you gotta find as much of that stuff in the writing process as possible.
And for the actors and the production designer and everything, I mean, they need to, not just because the production designer needs to know that there needs to be art on the walls, but they need to know what the movie is, what the feeling is, why this location should feel this way. And so that's stuff that comes from the script. And so when you, and I think your crew responds to you when you have such a handle on it, and then can trust you when you go, I thought this was right, but this is wrong. This doesn't feel right, because they know that you're not just willy-nilly. They know you know this. They can trust your compass, hopefully.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great. So
you freaked us out with that.
Questions from a.
We never stopped writing the script. What happened was we wrote for a while, and we sent it to some people. We got notes, and then we felt that we were ready to find other producers that would continue the creative development process. We knew we still had some work to do, but we felt we were able to walk into a room and do a 3-hour meeting about this, talk for 4 days about this movie if we needed to. We knew the movie, but we also knew that we still needed help. And so we found Animal Kingdom, and we started basically a whole nother writing room with you, me, and Josh, where we would meet very often for hours and hours at end at the Animal Kingdom office and just work on these scenes. I would go away for a week or so and come up with stuff and
very quickly developed a trust and shorthand with the
but
with,
always with writing those guys also. Yeah. Writing new pages up until the time you're shooting, but not because you're scrambling. Mm-hmm. Not because you're like, and I mean, I think there's these stories that are obviously true to a degree, and maybe they're exaggerated to a degree too, about like Casablanca, they were writing it as they shot it and stuff like that. Sure, but like it's hard to say we're just gonna go make Casablanca. That's not why that movie's good. That movie's not good because they didn't they got lucky by coming up with the best ending. That's the whole thing, like, right? They didn't have the ending while they were writing it. And maybe they didn't get lucky, the reason that movie's good is not because they didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
You know, and that becomes this sort of romanticized story because nobody wants to tell the story about, like, it went through 19 drafts. And yes, we knew the ending had some problems, but we had to shoot, but we were never going to let that be the, you know.
So then I guess while we're talking about influences, I mean, you didn't say Casablanca was an influence, but, you know, there's a lot of French New Wave sort of influence in your film. And can you talk about sort of using that as a tool to model your story around in a sense, I guess? Does that make sense as a question? Like using a genre or a form to inform your modern take?
I can see the movie when I'm writing it, and to a degree it changes. It's always interesting to me. I find that there's, whether it's a feature or a shorter project, that there's certain shots or ideas for scenes and they come out exactly as I thought they were. And then there's ones, most of them don't. And the ones that don't sometimes are not as good as how I had thought it was going to be, or better. Usually my favorite scenes or shots in the movies aren't the ones that were the exact vision I had. There'll be like 4 scenes where I'm like, wow, that's like out of my head. And those are usually pretty good. I don't know if that answers your question in any way. But basically, I think that having said that, I can see the movie, but I try not to think too much about style. I don't know. It's all feeling. I don't know the answer to that exactly. I'm sorry I failed you.
That's fine. I think that's a fair enough answer in itself. Maybe it's not.
I was definitely looking at other movies. I wasn't particularly looking at French New Wave. I think when people are talking, have brought that up before, I take it as a compliment. It's not something that I was looking at with this movie.
Gotcha.
I think that what they're meaning, hopefully, is, and you tell me, is that there's, so go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a lot, just the sort of style of the chase, I guess, element, where I remember like the shot coming from the top of the subway platform, right, and then following them, like, staying up high, but following them down like across the street, and you still the could shot. Like it's a great shot.
You could just say the shot.
The
you
shot. Know what it is. You know that shot. but yeah, I mean, you could still hear them talking, and you can still hear them going. But then also the carnival scene with mm-hmm. sort of the way mm-hmm. the music lined up with the lights mm-hmm. and that sort of.
I think to me that might have more to do with the feeling that those movies. Or a certain kind of French New Wave movie, mm-hmm. the more exuberant ones, which are actually rarer. Mm. But that the more exuberant New Wave movies have. I don't know if it's as much a stylistic aping of that. Maybe I'm wrong. But as much as it gives the feeling of somebody said, Sarah Sampson was like, I don't know if I can call her out, but she was like, it's the feeling of a trailer from a French New Wave movie. Like mm-hmm. when you see the Film Forum trailer, like, wow, that movie seems really fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then you see it and it's like, there's also a lot of sadness. Slow, you know? But something in terms of the motion and the, yeah. and the, the energy of the chase and the young people and you know, I don't know.
The two like leads to, I mean, just having it be sort of a story about tramps or like a ragtag group of people.
I think the thing was that we, yes, and that's true. And that was, and that's something very important for us on the movie. I think for us, we were talking about more classic Hollywood movies. Mm-hmm. And the two things that we were talking about actually when we were, after we'd written the script in some ways, classic Hollywood movies were something we were looking at a little bit when we were writing the script, but afterwards, when I was explaining it to people, we're talking about that, and we're talking about some Romer movies, in particular the Romer use of transportation, because the movie to me is about movement, and how he does these sort of transportation around the city sequences. I became very interested in that. And but we were just more trying to do our thing on what a classic romance is. And I think in some ways, a lot of French New Wave movies are doing their thing on Hollywood genres, whether they're it's a crime genre or it's a romance or whatever. And so maybe in sort of that way, there's a cousin relationship to it. And I'm not trying to poo-poo the comparison. I'll obviously take it.
Yeah, it's a good comparison.
Thank you very much. But yeah.
Cool. Great. So, I mean, I want to let you guys go soon. So let's just wrap up with a big question. If you had your best piece of advice to give to young or just emerging filmmakers, our listeners aren't all necessarily young, that's okay, what would you give them? What's your nugget?
Go ahead.
I mean, there's a lot, and it's always a tricky question because it's hard to come off. I think when you say it, it's hard to... I think it's hard not to think about how you're coming off. Like,
right.
You could come off as sort of negative, or you could come off as pretentious or something like that. I would say that for me, I sort of mentioned this, it's for me, the job is really identifying and being able to explain and communicate a vision for your story, and then identifying and finding talent to execute that story with, that vision with. And so that's a sort of a certain way of saying team building. Finding collaborators and identifying collaborators who want to tell the same story you want to tell in the way that you want to tell it. You need that. And I think that on my first movie, I would go around, I would get this question, and I would say something much less eloquent than that, because I was a rookie. No, but I would say something similar to that. And people seemed disappointed, and I think that people wanted you take peyote, you go on a vision quest, and you tell everyone to shut the fuck up and do what you... It's like, no, it's not how you actually do the work. And so you have to go out there and do the work. And to do the work, not only can you not do it by yourself, it is better is a collaborative art. It is made better by other people who want to make the same movie you want to make. So how do you find those people is its own challenge, and there's a lot of ways to find that, and that can be I worked at film festivals, and I PA'd, but I also worked at film festivals, and I met a lot of people through that. Jamie went to film school. I just think like PAing is a really important good thing to do. Everyone should do that, because it's important, I think, to know what it feels like to be bored on set. because when you're the director and producer, you're not bored. But you need to know the feeling of the people around you sometimes.
I think it's important too, just for finding those people. Like, being on set.
But then I was going to say, but yeah, then it's just being on set and finding people.
Being on set is such an exhausting and grueling thing that I don't think you really know who people are until you go through that with them. And I think part of the thing is the short film experience that we had together. And I think we...
Which was tough.
Which was tough. And I think that's when we recognized, like, oh, this is somebody that I like and I trust and I could work with again, and that sort of started it. And so I think it's important to, like, going to the same thing, it's all about collaboration, and I think you have to find those people that you genuinely like working with, because you got to spend a lot of time with them.
Yeah. People think I skipped a step sometimes because of Give Me the Loot. They think like, oh, I raised $60,000 and I just made this movie, and I I made the movie with people that I knew, that I had worked with before, that I trusted, and I had worked on movie. You know, it wasn't that. And I think sometimes people don't want to do that part of it. So yeah, just find people, work, go on set. I mean, actually, Birbiglia and I were talking about this yesterday because he's in the movie and he's here in Toronto with us. Just how PAs that, like, good PAs, just the good PAs on Tramps, you know, they can call us and we'll read their short script. We'll try to set them up with somebody who's trying to step up to be a producer. We'll try, you know what I mean? And like, so just doing work.
Yeah.
Is sort of doing work and finding people that want to do the same thing you do. I think there's a lot of projects and we know about this. It's just like people want to do something and they get somebody to say yes, but you have to cast this person. And it's like, well, I don't want to cast that person, but I really want to get the thing done. And then the thing just so it's not compromising your vision. It's finding people to share it with.
Yeah, almost like building it in a sense with them. Anything to add, Jamin, before we close? Or
I think that's
great.
Think that's great.
Cool. Well, thanks.
Thank
a lot,
you
guys.
So much.
Yeah, it was very informative. And good luck with the rest of the festival.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening. You can check out Tramps on Netflix now. And be sure to come back on Thursday for Indie Film Weekly, where we will be live from NAB in Las Vegas. If you like what you're hearing, go ahead and subscribe to the No Film School podcast. Give us a solid rating. And I'm John Fusco. You can follow me at Jim_John_Jim on Twitter. You can follow No Film School at No Film School. And we'll see you next time.